The Saint and the Witch by Hari Krishna Kaul, translated from Kashmiri by Nairhamatu. Tarachan died at 5:30 in the morning. The news reached Ramju's residence at 7. Immediately after, Ramju, Sonamal, and Hibatani left Jawaharnagar for Banamahala. "Salutations to such a death," said Ramju, "no pain, no illness. It was only the other day that I met him at Habakadal, and we stood there a long time, talking of this and that. Do you know what he said to me that day? 'Let the weather hold a little, I'll come and spend a few days with you all at Jawaharnagar.'" Ramju heaved a deep sigh and added, "Only goes to show you how near death is a fine release for him." "Nothing but snubs and knocks for the poor woman left behind," Sonamal said. "Even the ones born from your own womb do not bother these days. What can you expect from an adopted son? Dear God, let me not live a day without my husband. Let me go into your arms with all the marks of my marriage intact." She wiped a tear with a corner of the long veil covering her head. "Poor fellow, such a saintly soul he was. So obliging, always ready to help, be it friend or stranger. So good to everyone. And then he wielded such influence to seem to know everyone who mattered, and they held him in such high esteem," Ramju elaborated. "He looked like Lord Indra himself," Sonamal gushed. "His parrot green turban, almond-colored sherwani, tight-fitting white trousers and feet shot in fine moccasins, how well they suited him. I have never seen his footwear unpolished. Well, he was certainly a gay cavalier in his time," Ramju chuckled. "Don't you remember the stylish angle his turban had when Gaisha was getting married? I, as the husband of his eldest aunt, was the one who had tied the bridegroom's turban. But the wretch had it untied and declared that he would not step out for the bride's place unless his turban was tied by Darachand. They say that even at this age he would walk up to Hari Parbat every morning." Sonamal touched upon another aspect. "Not only that, he would spend every Saturday night at the feet of the goddess Chakreshwari. Every Ashtami would find him before the Devi at Kurbavani. What a voice he had. One day I heard him singing bhajans at Kurbavani. It was just like so many bells ringing at once. He was a Rajyogi. In fact, while seeming to enjoy all the luxuries of this life, he had attained a spiritual plane too high to comprehend by us. Who knows what secret mantras he chanted? That is exactly what stood by him at the end. They say that all great souls relinquish their bodies in this very manner. 1 minute they are there, and the next, gone. Didn't I say that one should salute such a manner of dying?" Hibatani heard her brother and sister-in-law's comments in silence. Their words seemed to torment her. She wondered why they could not observe even a minute's silence. How could they be rushing off to Banamahala with such enthusiasm? One would think they were going to a party. Did they not feel even a shred of sorrow at this sudden death? Darachan's death. She herself was devastated, numbed with grief. Had she had even the least suspicion that Darachan would be gone so soon, would she not have rushed to him, touched his feet, and sought his forgiveness? Would she not have fallen at his feet and confessed that truly it was she alone who was guilty of harboring the sinful thought at that fateful time when she had almost destroyed a lifetime's achievements of a tapasvi, a rishi like him? She was a sinner, she would have said, and asked for absolution from him. But alas, he had not even given her the opportunity for such penance. Tarachan's death had dealt her a blow, the anguish of which would stay with her till death. "There's no denying that Darachand was a saint," Ramju continued to eulogize the departed soul. "A saint indeed, a god, I would say," Sonamal corroborated heartily. "Pure heart, pure eye and handsome like a god. That was Darachand, and his wife, ugly as sin, yet he doted on her, ready even to hold out his palms to receive her spittle. How right you are, a woman like Tarawati. What an absurd match for a man like him. The like of her does not deserve to be called a wife. No looks, no brains, no grace of any kind, just a lump of flesh trailed by a veil. That may be so, but you can't deny that she is the real victim of this blow. Who can tell how Natha will treat her now, whether she will have any comfort from him? What comfort did she ever give him? As she has sown, so shall she reap. What can you expect from such a relationship? It is always the same in such cases. The mother never contented with the adopted child, and the child equally disgruntled. How can you say that? Sonamal countered. Not she is a real gem. And his wife Shantamik has. Meek can be. The two of them would not allow Darawati to lift a finger for any work. More likely than not, it is your own offspring who is ready to pluck out your entrails these days. Sonamal tied the sash round her fair and a little more tightly. But Darawati has raised Natha as her own from his infancy, as, if I know nothing, Sanamal contradicted her husband, I did not always live in a bungalow at Jawaharnagar, bless my Saiba, for it wasn't I their tenant. For all those years, I know every bit of the goings-on in that household, not once have I seen her brow free from a frown, always a sour face. That one, well, God also treated her the way she deserved, better be a bitch, ban Baron, that's what I think. How does it matter now? Our relationship was all with Daraj and he is in heaven, and the story ends. Yes, it was only he who knew how to maintain relations, the courtesies and graces of hospitality. Sanamal had still not exhausted herself talking. She continued, as, for her, the very sight of a guest would send her into mourning as if her father had just died. Tarachand enjoyed life to the full, not only enjoyed all the luxuries for himself, but ensured that others had them too. Actually, he was in government service at time when it meant something to be in it. Wherever he was posted, he received royal treatment. He did not have to suffer the indignities of this people's Raj too long either. He retired soon after it was imposed on us. Oh yes, he certainly did relish all the pleasures of this world. This must have been his only sorrow. To tell the truth, Tarawati is not so bad, only she is rather dumpy. I did not mean her looks alone. Every woman cannot have the beauty of a part, but this one seems to be a case apart. Knowing full well that her husband was a man of refined taste, delicate feelings, a lover of cleanliness, tidiness, and neatness, she should have paid some attention to her own grooming at least, but she seemed to find even washing her face a chore. Dressed in a rag of a farron, there she would sit at a window, mourning God knows what. Her hair always dangled, the tresses lank with grime. She looked like a witch indeed, God save us from evil. But Darachand never complained at all, Ramju said. Never, Sanamal agreed, he looked after her so well. You won't find such devotion even among the most modern of husbands. He was certainly a god incarnate, but his life was wasted and ruined by this witch. Tara Chan's life had been wasted and ruined. The realization of this had dawned upon Hibatani before everyone else, perhaps because her own life had also been wasted and ruined. She had just completed 15 years of age when she was married. Within 5 years she found herself a widow. But even out of those, more than 3 must have been spent in her parents' home. All that was a 30-year-old story. Today Hibatani could not even remember the face of the partner of that brief companionship. With the greatest effort, she could only stir a dim recollection of a vague form, an 18 or 19-year-old Kashmiri Pandit youth, thinly built, shy. When she used to go up to the storeroom to bring down rice or spices, he would follow, stalking her, but the loud shout of Demo Dera from his mother's powerful lungs would send him scurrying like a dog with ducked ears into the small room next door. How stern, how formidable his mother was. Far from giving the couple the privacy of a room of their own, she did not even allow them to exchange a few words with each other. The moment Hibatani returned from a long visit to her parents' house, her husband would find himself dispatched to his maternal grandparents' place. So apprehensive was the mother of losing her grip on her son. But in spite of all her efforts, lose him she did in the very 5th year of his marriage. Forever, the mother herself did not survive the son more than a year. For a long time after, Hibatani could see nothing but desolation. Wherever she turned, after her mother-in-law's death, her brother brought her home. For about a year she was looked after very well, but soon her sister-in-law put her to work, scrubbing and washing in the kitchen. Hibatani thought that this was what she had been made for. Accepting the finality of her fate, she plunged wholeheartedly into the drudgery and chores of her brother's household. Soon after, Ramju's relations with his collaterals soured, and, as a result of the family dispute, he moved out and became a tenant in a portion of Darachan's house. You could say, without fear of any contradiction, that it was here that a new life was breathed into Hibatani. Thanks to Darachand, he gave up going out in the evenings after returning from work, taking up the task of imparting religious education to Hibatani instead. He would read out the Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagwat, and Shiva Purana to her. He bought her copies of the Bhagavad Gita and Hanuman Chalisa to study. Instead of sweeping and mopping the floors in the mornings, Hibatani now went to the temple, gently pouring water on a Shivalinga. She also began to follow Darachand's practice of observing the Ashtami, Amavas, and Purnima as days of fasting and prayer. On these holy days, she would cook the ritual food, rice and vegetables for Darachand herself, simmering the sweetened milk till thickened, frying pakoras and potato chips, and making halwa. and Sagokiyar according to strictly laid down religious prescription. After he had been served and fed, she too would eat the same food. Taruwati could not have been too happy with Hibatani taking over these duties from her, but she could not say anything. Hibatani went on pilgrimages to several holy places with Darachand. On a number of Ashtamas, she went to Kurbavani with him. It was Darachand who was responsible for her going to Bhavan in Madan, where at long last, she had the Shraddha of the Porta de Madar performed. Once, when news came that a sadhu of great spiritual power had taken up residence in Chandigam, Darachand took her along to seek his blessings. They stayed at the sadhu Babaji's ashram for a night. The next afternoon they left for Sogam, on their way home. The memory of that fateful day sent shivers down Hibatani's spine even now. On the way, it had started to rain a sudden deluge that seemed to crush stones into sand with its fierce power. Drenched to the bones, their clothes ripped wet as though they had both had a dunking in the river. And, to top it all, there was no bus for the town at Sogam. Luckily Tarachan found an acquaintance in the overseer of the area. The overseer himself was away in Srinagar. But Darachand had the chowkitter open his official residence for them. The chowkitter lit the iron stove, and hugging its warmth, they dried their wet clothes. At about 5, Darachand went out and bought some meat, and asked the chowkitter for some rice, oil, and spices. Hibatani went into the kitchen and cooked a meal. After they had eaten, she spread the overseer's bedding for Darachand. For herself, she took a couple of blankets and lay down. But sleep eluded her. There was not a moment's lull in the rain. The month of July had become as bitingly cold as December. She tossed and turned on the cold floor for a long time, unable to find restful sleep, and then she quietly slipped under Tarachan's quilt. As her arm fell across his back, he woke up, finding Hibatani in his bed. He leapt out, went to the pitcher of water, washed his hands and feet, and sat down in the classic asana for meditation. Hibatani ran into the kitchen. In that refuge, she dug her teeth into her flesh. How she wished that the earth would open up and she jump into the abyss and disappear forever. Her eyes turned into crumpled, dried apricots with incessant weeping. For a long time afterwards she could not meet Darachan's eye. It was God's grace that soon after, they shifted to Jawaharnagar permanently. As they were leaving, there was a bitter altercation with Darawati, for some trifling reason, with the result that interaction between the two families ceased for the next few years. A long time had passed since then. Hibatani was almost 50 now. Many a time the thought had occurred to her that she should go to Tarachand and seek his forgiveness for her sin, but perhaps the shame was too deep for her to face him. Something always prevented her from carrying the thought out. The road from Jawaharnagar to Banamahala seemed too long even now. She was in mortal fear that they might have taken him away before their arrival. It was 8 by the time they reached Banamahala. Tarachan's body was still there. A flower-bedecked plank had been prepared, and it lay waiting in the yard. There was a large gathering of people sitting on mats around, every one of them relating the good deeds of the departed. Ramju sat down among them. Sunamal and Hibatani went in. Seeing them, Tarawati and a few other women set up a loud wail. Sunamal went close to Tarawati, and pressing a handkerchief to her lips, stopped her from crying. Hibatani did not go near Darawati. She went up to where Darachand had been laid down on a bed of grass. Taking hold of the dead man's feet, she wept profusely, emitting loud cries of, "Oh my father, brother, guru." After a while she rose, prostrated herself before Darachand's body, and said, under her breath, "It is true that I was the one enfolded by darkness. Please forgive me my sin. This life of mine was a complete waste and ruin. Let not the same happen to my next one. I must have your forgiveness." Tarachan's body, laid on the plank, was carried away at about 11, elaborately decorated with wreaths and garlands of fresh flowers. Just before the pallbearers lifted the plank, an expensive shawl was spread on it. Tarawati followed the funeral procession into the alley, weeping and wailing loudly. She was brought back, a couple of women supporting her. Once inside, she sat quietly for a long time, stunned into silence. Then, all of a sudden, she burst out to the women gathered before her, "Forgive me, my sisters, for 50 years the seal on my lips has not been broken, but now that he has left the house, I must speak. Look at me, even now I am that 7-year-old, untouched, unravished child bride." Hibatani seemed to fall from a great height. It was as though a light had begun to shine upon many a dark corner, an answer given to many an old puzzle. She rose and took the other woman in her arms, and the two women held together. the eighth day of the lunar fortnight, the night of the new moon, and the full moon night respectively.